Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Rebyte. This is Tim Elliott, and this is Rebyte number 8. And today I've got a gentleman, a true entrepreneur and a true gent, somebody I've had pleasure to know for ages, Mr. Bertie Cordingley. Bertie, say hello, introduce yourself, what you do and all that.
Hi, Tim. Thank you very much. Very kind words there. It's not often you refer to me as a gentleman, so I'll take that today. I'll take that on this lovely rainy morning. So I'm a serial entrepreneur, always worked on my own businesses. Going back to 2005, founded a business called fillmybelly.com, which in the infancy of the internet was an online ordering for takeaway food. Then grew, scaled that business and sold it to Just Eat in 2012. So since then was a director at Just Eat. I've worked on my own businesses, and now I work with budding entrepreneurs. So I work with startups, people getting started. So I help them get their business off the ground without wasting too much time and energy working on the wrong stuff. So that's what I focus on now. So I love working with startups, love that energy, and just love the whole industry as an industry.
Yeah, it's good. I like the energy that startups have. Is definitely kind of an addictive thing, right? Do you know what I mean? I love the birth of an idea and testing it and all that sort of stuff. But like you said, Bertie, I think what I see a lot of, whether it's on social media or in real life or at events and stuff, is people faced with a bunch of options, right? We're faced with, like on our phone, there's 400 options of what we could do action-wise, what action we could take to grow a business, to start a business, to find out who our customers are. That, like, the choice of doing the right stuff is something that I think we should focus on today, because there's so much stuff to choose from, right? How do you know which is the right stuff? Is there any cause or fundamentals or places you advise people to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's all very subjective to the business, but I think there's a general lack of education or awareness, and I've found that it differs by county. Obviously we're in the UK, right? So whoever's listening to this could be everywhere, but in the UK, like we're further up north. So I'm in Nottingham and I'm from Doncaster originally. So coming from Doncaster, the idea of like starting a business and finding an investor, like it's not, it wasn't even an option. Like no one had even spoke or said about those things. It wasn't taught in schools. Whereas working in London and working for Just Eat, it's like everybody knew about investment. Everybody knew how the whole thing worked. Even people in like the call center that I speak to, it's like, yeah, I've got this business idea. We're going to go for investment. And this, it's very different, and it varies certainly, depending on where you live. So I think, going back to your question, where do you start? I think it's what is consistent, I think, unless you really delve into this, is you think, right, okay, I want to start a business, so I'm going to go ahead and, let's just say it's an app, right? So I've got this idea, now I need to develop it, and then I need to sell it. Which is typically the stages what you'd think about, right? Maybe you'd have a rough business plan, you might do a little bit of market research, speak to some people, and then think, oh yeah, my gran said this is a great idea, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And then they'll go and spend their life savings on building this app and then launch it and then tumbleweeds. And that's generally the wrong way to go about something. People do it and you can get success, but essentially it's you're gambling that idea, right? So that's, I think that's like the wrong way to go about stuff.
It was, it reminds me of an interesting quote. I think Seth Godin, I read or heard him in a video or something recently. He says there's two types of startup, right? You either make a thing and then try and get people to want it, or you find people you want to serve, figure out what they need and build that, right? I kind of like that simplifying a pretty complex subject, right? In regards to that, which camp are you?
The latter, as in figuring out who your customers are and then building the product or service for them. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have, there are always exceptions to this rule. People always quote like Apple and Steve Jobs and standing up there with the iPhone and then the iPad, and like it's. But, you know, those things are the minority, and companies like that already had that following. And even though you've not necessarily seen the product before it was actually announced, like if you think of a company like Apple, like the tech space, the rumors, the blogs and all that sort of stuff, people are constantly talking about it. So those people aren't operating on a silo. They're listening to actually what consumers want, and they're, you know, building those things. But they have the opportunity to be able to do that because that community already exists, right? So if you've got a completely fresh idea, you can't compare yourself to someone like Apple, because you're not comparing apples to apples, are you? Essentially, it is a completely different scenario. So you can't say that Apple doesn't do consumer research. You know, it's, yeah, they are building brand new stuff, or, you know, like with the iPhone, that was completely innovative, right? You know, since then, you know, you could argue that things have changed. But yeah, there's, I think you, I do strongly believe that you have to listen to your customers and actually build something that customers want.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time you're going to get it wrong, and you need to be able to quickly iterate that. And if you've spent loads of time and cash building an app that you've built wrong for customers, then it's going to be expensive to change that. And this is why a lot of startups run out of money. They've taken investment, put it into a product or service, and then launched it, and then nothing happens. It's like, and then customers want something different. Suddenly it costs thousands, tens of thousands to go ahead and change that. So the good news is with this is the tools that are available today. Like, you don't need to go down that route anymore. You can test things out so easily. And when I say easily, it's not easy, don't get me wrong, but it's, you don't need to go and spend loads of time and money and energy physically employing a coder. You can do a lot of this stuff yourself or in-house.
Yeah, that's there's a few interesting things there. So the Apple thing, there was a myth or a rumor regarding Apple that they never did any market research for donkeys wanging around. And if you just, like anything on social media and the internet, right, if you actually spend time and don't take it at face value, you'll see that they spend millions. They're one of the biggest market research led customer led companies that there is, right? So there's that to do. But I think you were on an interesting kind of segue. So I've seen over the past, so as we record this, if you're listening in the future, it's the end of October 2020, so we're still in COVID times, and this year has been mainly COVID related. But there's been a lot of people, like two camps I want to talk to you about. One of people being using this time, whether it's on furlough or being made redundant, right, to maybe take a bit more time to plan out starting their own thing, whether that's going freelance or a real, you know, a product service sort of business. And a couple of interesting examples I've worked on is that existing businesses seem to be wanting more of a startup mindset. So that agility that you mentioned, right, that test and learn mindset, that test and learn behaviors inside theirs. Because I know a couple of good companies I've had the pleasure to consult with recently. One of them is a big engineering company in Bristol, who their main operating model, right, their main business model got so disrupted because they couldn't get any of the stuff, they couldn't get supplies, right? It was really affected. So they had to kind of spin out and their own startup. So their internal developers had built an end-to-end innovation project, like project management tool, right, from idea to testing to prototype, right? And they've spun that out as a software thing, right, which is real good.
Yeah.
And it's super tested because they, you know, it's a decent sized company and they've used it internally for 4 or 5 years, right? So they know it's good product. But they had to then go, all right, how do we make it a viable customer thing? And one of the biggest ones is IBM. So IBM have, for the first time in 43 years, I think, done their own startup, a communication design agency.
Really?
Because their main business is digital transformation. So they've been fine at this time. But there's been such an overwhelm of change at the moment, they've then thought, what else does the customer need, right? And developed a communications design outfit, right, agency, to help their customers communicate the change to customers, to teams, right, to leadership teams as well. So there seems to be those two things. People who had the job and are now thinking or have started startup, and existing companies wanting to spin their own startup out or behave a bit more like a startup. Have you seen any of those things yourself? Or
I think definitely both. I mean, there's loads of people that want to, you know, it's just given them the kick to start something themselves. And it's interesting because I think at the beginning there was, it almost seemed, maybe it's just because of the sort of things that I follow on social, it almost seemed that every other advert that was promoted, it's like, look, get off your ass, launch your own business, do this, do that, you know, like, don't waste this time. You're not going to get this time again. And I don't necessarily believe in that mindset. I think if it's something that you want to do, fantastic. Then look, it's, and this is almost what I say to people that I work with. It's like, if you want to do this, I'll help you. But if you don't want to do it, and if you want to just actually enjoy being on furlough, spend some time with the kids, go on extra walks, watch more Netflix, then just do it, right? Like, it doesn't, there's no, I think you've got to like balance what's right for you. And it's ultimately, you know, happiness is ultimately like, you know, what you're looking for, isn't it? So you've got to do the things that make you happy. Getting back to your point, there's, I think what a lot of companies realized is that they were grossly underprepared for this situation. I think it's been reassuring that like everyone's going through it at the same time, but some people have handled it very differently. And I think a lot of people that were maybe coasting in their jobs, for example, have almost realized that, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing for them. And it's made them sort of wake up, and it's made companies, I'm not saying that everyone that's been made redundant was just coasting. That isn't the point. But certainly, you know, and we all know with any company, when you've worked in places and you've been like, I don't actually know what they do. I don't know why they're here. I don't know why they're still employed. And I think, you know, I think some companies have actually woke up and realized it's made them take the action. And, you know, so there's been a lot of changes. But that startup mindset for those companies is definitely important. And I have seen that now. It's almost like just take a step back and like, what actually are we doing? And like you said, and I've got another example of where a company suddenly going into COVID was really, really like, if they'd have not made any changes, they'd have been stuck. They'd have just had to ride it out, probably lost staff. Whereas actually they've don't want to use the word pivot, it's everywhere, right? But not necessarily pivoted, but actually looked and said, look, where can we apply our skills? So, you know, we're doing X as a company, but, you know, we've got this skill set, and this skill set, where can we apply it? And I'm not trying to name that. I didn't want to discuss them they've completely pivoted into another area, as well as their existing business, and have completely thrived. You know, I'm talking about, like, you know, the month after did more revenue than their previous 12 months, like, amazing success story. But they've done it in the right way. They focused on the right stuff, and they didn't take advantage of the situation, because a lot of people were, right? You know, you were seeing that. And I think that's the, you know, like, unnecessary price rises in things at the beginning, and people just generally just taking the piss. And I'm not up for that stuff at all. Yeah. And, you know, those places, they haven't, they haven't survived. It was a short term. This was my advice right at the beginning. So I'm going all over the shop today. My advice to people at the beginning was like, you know, yes, you know, you need to look at your short term immediately, like business survival, etc. But do not lose sight of your long term goals under any circumstances. Stay focused on those. And if you're doing something short term that is against your long term, I would strongly suggest that you question it. And I think that's the people that didn't, not necessarily the people that I advised, but you can see that companies didn't follow that advice have suffered. Because they've done stuff short term that's affected long term. You know, airlines and things like that, you know, they were all in the news, you know, just the way that they treated their staff. Then when they came back on, and they've got a massive issue, right? So, there's lots of panic and reaction thinking. So the people that have adopted that startup mindset, Yes, absolutely. You know, they're the ones now that are surviving, because it is all about test and learning. We're never too old as a business, or as individuals to learn.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's something we is worth unpacking, because, like you alluded to in the beginning, right? It seems to be on social. You're one of the few people who have done the startup journey, right? Because there's a lot of people out there who are working on startups that haven't built and sold and carried on a thing, right? Because that's right. You can read a shitload about that sort of stuff, but unless you've done it, I'm sure that there's lessons and depth in there. So I thought it'd be interesting if we unpack what a startup mindset is for those people who are listening or employed in a company and want to do work differently, right? Want to be a bit more agile, want to maybe launch products and services, but in a different way. Diversify business models even. What goes into a startup mindset? Are there any core, we've said the test and learn mentality, right? Like, is there, that always feels to me like maybe speed. There's some kind of speed or momentum feeling to a startup.
Yeah, it is. It's it's speed, momentum, and it's just testing loads and loads of stuff and seeing what sticks. So it's constantly running experiments, right? As in, and you never get to a point where you stop. It's almost like everything that you do can be an experiment. So it starts from basically whenever you're going to do something, whenever you're going to put your time and energy into something, like almost bet on what the result's going to be. So, you know, you doing this podcast, et cetera, you know, rather than just like, oh, I'm just launch a podcast and just do it. It's like, well, actually, you know, I'm we've not spoke about this. I'm speaking for you now. You know, maybe that you can, yeah, you say, right, I'm going to try this for a period of 6 months. I'd like to get to X number of subscribers. That might lead to, you know, these number of opportunities. And, you know, at the end of that 6 months, and it's a constant review process, like looking into it, are things growing, et cetera. And you get to the end of that 6 months then, and this is the important thing. It's like, well, actually, has that met those objectives? What have I learned, more importantly? And then do you continue? Because a lot of people would just, well, I've launched a podcast now. I might just carry on, even though no one's listening to it. And hopefully people are listening to this right now. Like, people are listening to it right now. So thank you for listening to me rabbit on Tim's podcast. I think that's the mindset. It's the ability to be really, really quick. And like, if you want to do something, just go ahead and do it. So yeah, figure out what your KPIs are. And I talk a lot about the pirate metrics, you know, being like acquisition, activation, retention, referral, and revenue.
Yeah.
So acquisition is it's like the awareness acquisition phase. It's where do your customers come from? Activation is the customer's first meaningful interaction. So it might be when they've bought from you. It might be from the download of an app. Retention, do they come back? Referral, do they tell others about it? And then revenue, the important one being revenue is 99.9% of the time just a result of all those other things. And I say 99 because obviously you can do things like put prices up and things like that, which you know, just revenue focused, but you know, it should always be the focus about those things. So I think that's that startup mindset. It's understanding what you need to be looking at that very point in your business. What is the metric that matters now, right now, and then running experiments, testing things that focus on that, because this changes week in, week out. You know, you have like your big goals and things like that, which generally are fixed, but your one metric that matters can completely change. So suddenly, like, you know, if we take like a high street business, for example, you know, they've suddenly got loads of footfall. They're not necessarily worried about customer retention, things like that, because they're right outside a bus stop and people are getting off the bus and buying coffee and cake and stuff like that. COVID hits and literally the whole world's changed. And it's like, well, what do we do now? Well, it's actually like you're now not focused on that activation point because you've got no customers coming in. You need to go back to the beginning and focus on something else. So can you pivot? Can you change online? What can you try? So this is the startup mindset. It's constantly reviewing those things. And the people that I work with have a, you know, constant like, because everyone has ideas, right? We all have ideas. Yeah. And the danger is that we end up just, I mean, Tim, you probably do this. Like, I'm doing it now. It's almost like, oh, actually, Tim, hold on a minute. I've just got to go start working on it. But how many times a day do you do it? How many times do you have this great idea? And it's like, oh, I'll just Google that. Maybe I'll just, yeah, this, and this might be the silver bullet to my business, whatever. And then you've stopped focusing on what you're doing. Yeah. So it's like, what you basically do is you write those ideas as they come along, collate them, stick them into a pot, and then just spend 20 minutes a week prioritizing those. But put them into those pots, like I just said. This is an idea for retention. This is for referral. Then each week, right, this week, we need to focus 100% on acquisition. We've got no customers coming in. So what do we do? Well, actually, we've got all those ideas that I've been jotting down. Let's take the top three and we're going to test them.
Yeah.
And actually see what those results are. And then they either work or they don't. And then we run another three. And then those metrics might change. Then you might have some more customers coming in, but then actually you need to convert them or activate. And that's essentially the startup process.
Yeah, there's a lot of lessons that people can transfer out of a startup. Like we said before in this chat, like maybe startups not for everybody, although it looks super appealing on the face of it, right? It's like I've been self-employed pretty much since 2010 and ran agencies and stuff like that. And it's like, it's difficult. We were talking to somebody we both know last night on the podcast, Fiona Duncan-Steer from RSVIP, oh, yeah. Who's like built an amazing business like over 15 years.
Yeah.
Right. And she was alluding to, like, still the level of work it takes today after 15 years, like still the amount of not just actual work, not like keyboard time, not like pressing the flesh, not like actual work, but like the emotional energy it still takes, right, is tiring, right? And we both do stuff for universities, for young people on... Like I lecture on marketing strategy for entrepreneurial firms at Nottingham Uni. And I think you've done some at Trent, you were saying, but like it, at their age, right, it's bright eyes, bushy tails going, this would be amazing. I'll do it for 4 years. I'll retire at 27. It'll be beautiful. Right. And I'm sitting there going, no, it's like really hard. It's like really hard, like not to bum you out, but it's proper hard and you haven't figured it out. Like you haven't figured out the solution. Like I spoke to somebody earlier this week, an interesting anecdote, who has started a business that solves poverty. And I went, poverty? He went, yeah, we're covering it all. I went, you can solve poverty. I'm not sure. Right, there's just some other work to unpack because people have tried this. Or like other people, like loads of money. and it's that, it looks really easy, but there's, I suppose it's that classic iceberg gif, right? Yeah. With the thing at the bottom. And Fiona was saying last night, I'm sure you'll iterate that, how much time and energy and effort you think it will take, like 10x it.
Yeah.
Like exactly.
It's not glamorous. It's not standing in front of private jets. It's fucking hard work, a lot of hard work. And you don't realize, and sacrifice as well, right? And like people, like I've been asked before, like, would I do it again? And like, and talking back to sort of going back to fill my belly now. And to be honest, I don't know. I like to say yes. But when I actually think now, so we're going back to 2005, my son had just been born. So it felt like that first few years didn't see him, like, you know, didn't do any of like the getting up to feeding because I had to be up early and was working. I would get up at, like, I wasn't an early riser, I am now, but, you know, early for me then was like 7:30. But I would be sat at my desk at 8 o'clock, like in this, probably not even in a room that was as big as this desk. There's a picture of it on my Instagram somewhere. I put on recently and with my badly dyed hair at the time. And I would be sat there in my dressing gown at 8 o'clock and I would be there till like 2 a.m. Some days I just wouldn't move. And it was like that constantly, day in, day out. for those first few years. And it took ages for bookings to start coming through. Like, we got the first booking within like the first hour, turned out to be false, then not another one for like 3 days. And it was hard work, and it just felt for ages we were just stuck on this like low number of orders per day. Was it ever going to change? And yet you forget all of that stuff, and being so broke as well. Like, I can't tell you like how broke I was at that time. Again, no idea about investment. The whole business was funded off interest-free credit cards, literally moving money around. So every month it was like, okay, so I'm just going to move this money from here, and it's like, this can't continue. So, you know, I'm not trying to put anybody off, but it's hard, and there's sacrifice. You know, like, I remember like going out for dinner and not being able to afford to pay, and then my friends having to like chip in, all of that sort of stuff. You know, fortunately those days are over, but there's a lot of hard stuff you have to go through to get to that point, and you do have to sacrifice. Yeah, there's a lot of things that if I was to run that again, I would know and do differently. But yeah, it's hard work, but rewarding. Like, there was never a point where I ever doubted that business. Like, generally loved it, loved talking about it. You know, loved the successes, but you know, you have to be able to take on that stuff as well.
Yeah. I think that's solid advice. And I think to kind of round up this episode, if there's somebody listening to this where and they're on that brink, right, they're ready to take the plunge, right, what bit of advice or question would you ask them to just help them take that plunge? What could you leave them with if they're at that stage?
Yeah, I think actually, like, figure out actually what their goal is. Like, if their goal is to be a millionaire or a billionaire, or like, then I would strongly question what it is that you're doing. If you know, because like what I was saying before, like, the revenue is always a result of this stuff. It's about doing stuff that you love. That, don't get me wrong, it's not that I loved takeaway, I wanted to be in that industry or anything. It's just I loved solving problems, and you know, I love the technology side, and so all of that stuff really fit with my skill set and what I was interested in. So I think if you can figure out, and it's that cliche, right, if you can do something that you enjoy doing, and that meets in that middle point of, you know, what you're good at, what you enjoy, and what your passion is, and if you can find those synergies there, and you know, you can de-risk it as much as you can and try things out, then just go ahead and do it. I think it's better to regret the things you've done than to regret the things that you haven't done. But do you just go in and leave your job and go and start something else? Absolutely not. You know, it's very rare. We were just talking before this podcast, like, I've only ever given that advice to somebody once, and that was very, very recent, and the circumstances were extreme. But generally, like, you're going to have to give up something. And I think I was talking about this at a talk with you recently, it was early in the year, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You're speaking about investing. It's like, you know, if you're going to invest something, something up. But you don't have to give up your job. You just could invest that time in the evening and not watch Netflix, etc., and invest in that way. So, yeah, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. But if you're waking up every morning and constantly thinking, I really want to be doing this, then you owe it to yourself to try. If you're thinking, I just want to be rich, I don't know what to do, so I'm maybe going to buy some like bullshit $4,000 course or $3,997 course and, you know, do something just to make money, because, you know, this guy's got the same backstory as me, and you know, like, he was living on a mattress and all this shit that's out there, then, you know, that's a silver bullet that you're looking for, and I assure you it does not exist. So find the thing that you enjoy doing, and, you know, say to yourself, this is going to take some time, and if you want to do it, and obviously, you know, there's testament people out there, go ahead and do this, then you can do it. I believe in you. If you have the idea and you've been thinking about it for a while, you want to go ahead and do it, go and do it.
Brilliant.
I've got you back.
That's a good ending, Bertie, and to so people can tell you that. Where's the best place people can find you and get hold of you? We will put it in the show notes as well, but let people know now.
Oh yeah, so I've got one of those website things. So you can find me at Bertie Cord. So my name is BERTIECORD. It's not that I'm ashamed of my name accordingly. It's just that that's also my social handle, and it was far too long, so I've just had to abbreviate it. So yeah, Bertie Cord, and that's how you can get hold of me on all socials. So yeah, you can drop me a message on any of the socials. The only one that I generally ignore is Facebook, but the rest of them, yeah, I'm generally quite active on there. So if you want to get in touch, got any questions, I do love the conversation and hearing about people's ideas. So yeah, please do get in touch with me. That would be fantastic.
Awesome. So actually, we will put all those links to Bertie and the talk he alluded to for Creative Mornings earlier in the year in the show notes. But thanks for listening. This was Bertie Cordingley. This was Rebite number 8. And I've been Tim Elliott. Thank you very much.